great opportunity here to catch up with, well, a man that covers very intensively the CONCACAF region, which is, as we know, changing, emerging, moving in different directions by the tournament. He's John Arnold, and he's got the Getting CONCACAF newsletter, as well as writing features right now in the League's Cup. John, thanks so much for joining us.
Hey, always good to be here, Glenn. How are you?
All right. You're one of this new breed of young journalists, I think, that are really capturing a lot of readership and are really passionately going after this in your journalistic career. But your passion for the sports clearly comes through. The reason why you got focused on the CONCACAF region, I think it's interesting to find out from you.
Yeah, you know, I think a lot of it was just coming up as a soccer fan and watching games and sort of realizing that, you know, while a lot of our colleagues are doing their research and their homework, sometimes you would watch a game like a U.S. qualifier and they'd be playing a team like Costa Rica and just the MLS players would get spotlighted. And sometimes that was appropriate and those were the star players, but there were plenty of other times where there were really, really good players who just seemed to be flying under the radar. So as I kind of increased my, I guess, journalism and started to report and realize, hey man, sometimes I can just pick up the phone and call these guys. I decided to pursue that. So, you know, learned Spanish and started to write more about the CONCACAF region. And I was working with a website full time. And then a couple years ago decided, you know, I'm just going to start telling every story I want to tell in the newsletter. So yeah, it's I guess a bit of a thumbnail sketch of how it all got going.
You know, it's interesting because it's easy to do the messy story, right? That one's out there. Everybody's going to want to read it potentially. But it's also fun, right, for you to kind of mine these stories that nobody really knows about and then bring this thing to light through words.
Yeah, it's special to be able to do a story. You know, one of the ones I did on the newsletter before the Gold Cup preliminary round was talking with a guy named Gerwin Lake. He was the leading scorer for the entire CONCACAF Nations League. Remember, it's not just the U.S. and Mexico. This goes all the way down to the CONCACAF's smallest members. He plays for Sint Maarten, the Dutch side of the island that maybe people know from vacationing or seeing some beautiful photos of or crazy pictures of the airport where there's people sunbathing and the planes coming right down. So he was the leading scorer. I called him up. He works in Rotterdam. He's from the Netherlands. He was eligible through a family member to play for Sint Maarten. And so, you know, he works logistics during the day. He plays soccer at night. He wrote to the Sint Maarten national team saying, hey, I think I could help you guys out. They held a tryout in the Netherlands. They said within one session, he was already signed up. And now he's scoring goals. You know, everyone's telling the messy story. And I like to try and put my own spin on it. It's always a joy to tell the most important story. World Cup, Women's World Cup, big time national team, big time club. But I get a special joy from telling those stories that no one has heard of, that no one knows. And not that you do it for this, but those are the types of stories as well where, you know, you get a message from Gerwin Lake after saying, man, hey, I didn't realize people were going to take notice and understand who I was better just from this simple interview and newsletter. So those are the moments that kind of keep propelling me forward and keeping me interested in that kind of thing.
Yeah, and as someone who has family in the Caribbean for many, many, many years, those stories abound. I mean, they're amazing. So, I mean, most people don't even know Tim Duncan was a swimmer before he became a basketball player from St. Croix. So, you know, before going on to fame in the NBA. We're talking to @Arnold, John on Twitter. He's got the Getting CONCACAF newsletter, which I receive. I love that. He's doing features on the League Cup right now. All right, you were at you were up in Frisco, right, for the Messi game? Just
yeah,
give me some impressions and thoughts, because from the perspective of watching it on TV, it Lionel Messi lifted everybody from every single player on that field to the crowd.
No, absolutely. I think Messi's impact is just so monumental. And, you know, I get to games quite early. I'm sure you do too, Glenn, to, you know, kind of get in my spot and prepare. And you know, usually it's a pretty lonely time when I get to Frisco several hours early, but already fans were lined up hoping to see Messi get off the bus, trying to, you know, get a Messi jersey from the people selling them on the street corner, which certainly isn't something that happens at every game in Frisco. So from that moment on, you knew it was going to be a different night. And it was. I think you talk about him kind of raising the game. You know, fans were certainly engaged from minute one. And I think it was interesting. You know, some of the people wearing Argentina 10 jerseys or wearing Messi's jersey from PSG or Barcelona, you could tell were more FC Dallas fans than Inter Miami fans. And so they were cheering when FC Dallas was scoring goals. When they went up 3-1 at one point in the game, the people are still clapping and cheering. But then Messi did what Messi does. Miami goes to penalties. And, you know, I think raising the game of the other players as well. You saw Alan Velasco, FC Dallas's Argentine, who has Maradona tattooed on his back, such as his respect and love for the Argentine heroes who have gone before him. So Messi is obviously quite an important figure for him as well. He had his best game of the season. He's actually had a bit of a sophomore slump this year for FC Dallas, and yet really was a player that I think, you know, probably gets an 8 out of 10 rating for the game if you kind of do the L'Equipe style or whatever it is. I don't know, but you know, he raises his game. Defenders are raising their game. Everyone is, but you know, no matter how much you raise your game, Lionel Messi still is Lionel Messi. He can still hit that free kick from that spot. He can still beat the goalkeeper no matter what he does. And you know, I was kind of skeptical that Miami would be able to make this deep of a run in this League's Cup tournament, not because of a lack of talent by any stretch by Lionel Messi. We saw him win the World Cup just a few months ago, by Sergio Busquets or by Jordi Alba, just because I wondered how quickly it would gel. I think they still have some problems with that, but it seems like Messi can paper over a lot of those cracks.
No question about it. And you know, I kind of put myself in the mind of, number one, the players on Inter Miami. All of a sudden, the biggest known soccer player in the world who just lifted the World Cup is in your team. So now you're training with him every day. You're around him. Same thing goes for opponents who, you know, you have to think in your head, this is a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity for me. I want to shine in that one moment. It may never come again for me. And to your point about Velasco, it's one of the best games I've ever seen him play. And not only with the ball, but without the ball. When Inter Miami was in possession, he was trying to make it difficult for Busquets, et cetera, et cetera. So great point. You wrote a great article on the League's Cup website. And I would suggest people go to leaguescup.com and read this, especially Houstonians. It was titled Monterrey North, Rayados Tigres fans at home in Houston's passionate League Cup knockout atmosphere. You and I were talking before the interview. It's always great when somebody outside a market does a great take. You did a great take on this, in my opinion. I really applaud you, because we have known for years that fans of Tigres and Rayados drive across the border, invest time, money, to go and support their team. We know the link with Houston, Texas, with Tigres and Rayados. They may be the biggest. I think they're the biggest brand, potentially, these two teams in this region of the world. With all due respect to Club America and Chivas, I think they're in there. But this was a great article. Why did you decide to do this article?
Well, for the League's Cup site, we're trying to do articles like that that go a little bit beyond simply what was a great game. But, you know, if you watch the game or if you watch the highlights, you already know it was a great game. Not to say there's not value in writing those types of stories. I do them all the time and try and put a special spin on them. But we're trying to look for these stories about connection, about sort of how the U.S. and Mexican soccer culture is colliding, what beautiful moments that creates, what moments of friction that creates. And I think that when I saw this game, Monterrey Tigres was going to be in Houston, I thought, man, I got to be there, because I've been to previous games, Tigres America a couple years ago, some friendly matches, sometimes that have involved the Dynamo. With my work, I've just been in Houston before and seen not only kind of how passionate about Tigres and Rayados Houston really is, just how many people from Monterrey live in Houston, and how quote-unquote Regio, as sometimes the city city's residents are nicknamed, just how Regio Houston is. So the atmosphere delivered. You know, I wasn't sure 100% what I would find, but what I found was something that I thought was quite beautiful. You know, it was a neutral site game. It had been 10 years since the Clásico Regio had been played outside of Nuevo León, the state where Tigres and Rayados both play. And so you had fans from Monterrey chanting and singing. You had fans from Tigres chanting and singing. You had just a really cool vibe. And I think it's notable that despite the fact that we've all known this for a long time, even 10 years ago when they were putting the games in Robertson Stadium saying, hey, this is where the people from Monterrey are, now we finally see the clubs, Tigres and Rayados, investing and trying to make those fans who exist and will never stop supporting their team feel more like they're part of the community, feel more plugged into the club. And I think, you have to ask questions about, the Houston Dynamo and other teams in the state and other teams in MLS, where it's, I was saying, hey, some of these Messi fans, they're also rooting for FC Dallas. How do you get those fans who are Rayados Tigres and they want to watch every game every Saturday to also become fans of the local team in their city? I think it's a big challenge, but if you recognize that that community is there, and I think if you value that and say, this is beautiful, it's really cool what you've built here. It's cool that Tigres is trying to host more events. It's cool that Rayados are launching social media accounts in English. It's cool that both of these teams are making an effort. How can we become that other team? Tigres, I spoke to the vice president for marketing, a very impressive guy, very smart strategy. And he said, we're trying to become everyone's third in the third top three favorite Mexican teams. They don't mind if you root for the Houston Texans or the Houston Dynamo. They're saying we want to be your favorite Mexican team. And they understand Chivas and America are already very powerful, but we think we can win more fans. That's their strategy, that's their idea. And I think it's a really wise way of looking at a very complex market and fandom that's evolving and changing as we all sort of start to consume sports in a different way.
John Arnold, he's at Arnold, comma, you got to spell it out, COMMA, John, JON, at Twitter. All right. And he's writing for the League's Cup. He's also got the Getting CONCACAF newsletter. I suggest you get it. As we heard, Tuca Ferretti came out very strongly with a lot of comments about how the gap is narrowed. Liga MX is no longer the dominant league in the world. I think we all saw that kind of coming with additional investment. From the Mexican perspective, and I talk with a lot of people in Mexico about this, player development down there, how is the gap narrowed from a competitive standpoint in your mind, John?
Yeah, when we talk about the leagues, I think that the biggest thing setting apart MLS in Mexico is this player development idea. And I would say the US sort of accepting that these players are going to develop better elsewhere and trying to get players to Europe as quickly as possible. Clubs being open
By
to
the way,
that.
I have to stop you there. Remember when that was so valiantly fought against when Jurgen Klinsmann was pushing a portion of the American players to try to go to Europe? And look where we are now. The basis of our national team is the likes of Adams, McKinney, Pulisic, that all really started their careers over there, apart from, developing in maybe academies with MLS teams.
And I would love to see the day when MLS in Mexico have the best coaching, have the best atmosphere, have the best nutrition, weightlifting programs, etc. But right now, Europe is still ahead of us, right? And so I think MLS has come to that acceptance and figured out a way, crucially, to make it work economically. Clubs understand that if I sell it a 17 or 18-year-old kid for very low money, but I keep a big portion of that sell-on, when this kid succeeds, as we hope and think he will, I will then benefit. That delayed sort of, it's not, I mean, maybe gratification, that delayed cash, I think, is vital because Mexican clubs are still starting to sort of have the wheels turn there, but mostly want to keep their players at home. And so when you see players take the jump across the Atlantic Ocean, if they do it, it's often quite late. I think that's sort of the biggest, issue between national team player development. Well, so why are we not seeing Liga MX teams win in all these League Cup games? First of all, they're playing every game on the road. That's crucial and critical. We know from MLS results, it's very difficult to go on the road, especially when you've been on the road for as long as these Mexican teams have been on the road, which is almost a month now for most of them. But I think the other thing is that you are starting to see MLS close that spending gap a little bit and start to have some of these younger players in the middle tier, if we want to call it that, roster slots, have a better soccer education, have stronger soccer IQ, and just be better players technically on the ball with their understanding of positioning. I would say that those players are starting to catch up. I would caution, when we look at the CONCACAF Champions Cup, as it's now called, when we look at future editions of Leagues Cup, I wouldn't be surprised at all to see Mexican clubs kind of roar back. But in this edition, As we're talking, Glenn, there's two left: Monterrey, who beat Tigres, and Querétaro. You don't necessarily look. That means guaranteed. There's at least one MLS team that's going to secure one of these three CONCACAF Champions slots that are available in League's Cup. So that's already, I think, a bit of a success for Major League Soccer. If an MLS team lifts this trophy, I think that would be a big success. And if it's two out of three or three out of three that get these CONCACAF slots, there's no doubt about it. MLS has sort of very convincingly, quote unquote, won this tournament. I think it would be fascinating to watch be great to be a fly on the wall in the next meeting between Don Garber and Mikel Arriola, the two leaders of the leagues, because I think at some point, and it could be this year, Mexican teams are going to say, hey, hold on a second. We got to host some games because it's not fair. But if these teams are competing on a level playing field, I think we would see very even results. And that speaks really well, not just to what MLS is doing, but I think to the development of the club game in the region.
John, there is a thing called cash payola greenbacks. That's the great neutralizer in all of this. But listen, it's been a great tournament. We've got LAFC Monterrey as one of the quarterfinals, Minnesota, Nashville, the Philadelphia Union, Querétaro, and then Inter Miami and Charlotte. And we're crying crocodile tears down here in Houston because the Dynamo had a shot at playing against Messi and Inter Miami. Yeah, in Fort Lauderdale. John, as always, thank you so much for coming on. Wonderful stuff. We look forward to another visit in the future.
My pleasure, Glenn. Talk soon.
All right. On Twitter, at Arnold, John, J-O-N. Getting CONCACAF newsletter. I suggest you read it. He's another one of these great rising young writers. These guys are putting the real work in. I mean, these are really intensive articles. And if you go over to leaguescup.com, you can go over there and you'll get a real good feature on Monterrey and Rayados and what it means to Houston. And as somebody who's been here since '84, I can tell you he's right on with this article.